Hello and welcome to More or Less on the BBC World Service. We're the programme that spends our holiday season unwrapping one statistic at a time, and I'm Tim Harford. It's become a tradition of ours to gather guests old and new to take a look back at the most concerning, peculiar, or quite frankly, extraordinary numbers of the year. Our first guest comes from an organisation producing thousands of charts across hundreds of topics, so it's safe to say she's got numbers at her fingertips.
I'm Dr. Hannah Ritchie. I'm Head of Research at Our World in Data and a Senior Researcher at the University of Oxford. My number of the year for 2021 is 12 million.
We're starting big.
So the 12 million represents the estimated number of excess deaths that have occurred globally this year.
That means 12 million more people died in 2021 than we'd expect to see in a normal year. We've certainly had an extraordinary couple of years, at least medically speaking, but can we attribute all of those extra deaths to COVID?
We should be careful not to directly attribute all of that to COVID.
Loyal More or Less listeners may recall that measuring excess deaths is an alternative way to estimate the impact of the pandemic. Rather than trying to attribute deaths to COVID, you count any death from any cause and ask if there are more or fewer than in a typical year. This is useful because it can be surprisingly difficult to determine what was a direct COVID death and what wasn't.
We know, for example, that due to a lack of testing or underreporting, that we've probably missed a lot of deaths from COVID. In some countries, we just know that testing just has not been thorough enough to pick up all of the COVID infections and therefore COVID deaths. On the other hand, there is the additional issue that some people might have died with a positive test result and therefore been counted as a COVID death, but maybe they died from other causes. And then the final reason is that they don't take account of indirect knock-on impacts. So, for example, if hospitals are running over capacity, this might have spillover effects into other causes of death.
So while people didn't die directly of COVID, their deaths were linked in some way to the changes wrought by the pandemic. The 12 million figure is just for 2021, so I asked Hannah what the estimate was for the whole of the pandemic.
So the estimate would give us excess death toll of 18 million. The confirmed death toll globally has been just over 5 million. So we're talking about 3 to 4 times higher than this confirmed death toll that always gets reported. It gives us some inclination of what the true impact of the pandemic has been on deaths.
Loyal listeners will be familiar with our next guest, who appeared last year on More or Less to discuss widespread predictions of a lockdown baby boom. She told us those predictions were nonsense, and she was right.
I am Marina Adshade. I'm an economics professor at the Vancouver School of Economics at the University of British Columbia. And my number of the year is the total fertility rate for the United States, which is 1.64.
Right. So is a total fertility rate of 1.64 a big number or a small one?
The total fertility rate is actually a projection for how many children a woman will have over her lifetime. It's sometimes very, very wrong because it is a forecast, but it gives us a general sense about what's happening with trends for births in countries.
Assuming there's no net migration and mortality rates are constant, a total fertility rate of 1.64 means your population is shrinking. You need about 2.1 children per woman for a broadly stable population.
So the reason why it's just over two is because not all children survive to adulthood. So it's based on child mortality rates. So countries with really high child mortality rates, the number is quite a bit higher than two.
But why point to the figure of 1.64 in the US? What's striking about that?
It's an odd choice in that 1.64 for a developed country isn't low. For example, Canada's child fertility rate has been around 1.64 for the last 25 years. But it's very unusual for the United States, right? 10 years ago, the United States was at two. And so it's seen a rapid decline over time.
Sounds like we're talking about huge demographic shifts here. Now, you mentioned the pandemic. Could that be driving this decline?
the pandemic has really accelerated it. But there's a number of things going on in the States. The first is that 10 years ago, the U.S. had really high teen birth rates, especially compared to other developed countries. And that's something that's really changed over time, is that teenagers are far less likely to be giving birth now than they were 10 years ago. So this is a good thing.
But not such a good thing is that many women in the US seem to want children, but feel constrained by very limited parental leave or the availability of childcare.
Women are lucky if they get 6 weeks leave, which would be considered crazy in most developed countries. And so what that means is a lot of women are facing a trade-off. They're choosing, do I have more children or do I keep my job? Whereas for most developed countries, that's not the question they're asking themselves. I think we've reached a point in history where women are choosing to stay in the workforce rather than have more children. And that's in part why we're getting this transition.
Our final figure comes from somewhere a little more remote, the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii, which sits on the summit of a volcano. Let me introduce you to someone who studied the figures emerging from the observatory very closely.
My name is Helene Koning. I'm a professor at Eindhoven University of Technology, and I have contributed to several reports by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And my number of the year is 420.01.
Very specific. I wonder what lies behind this particular figure.
It represents a weekly average of the CO2 concentration in parts per million.
Aha. So that essentially means that for every million molecules floating around in the air around the observatory, 420 of them were CO2. These molecules might be too small for the human eye, but air is made up of a finely tuned balance of gases. Tip that balance and things could go horribly wrong. The research station has been monitoring any changes to this balance continuously since the 1950s.
And it's the first time this year that it actually exceeded 420. And 420 is an increase of 50% compared to pre-industrial CO2 concentrations.
Yikes. So 2021 saw carbon dioxide in the atmosphere reach a record high. And that's despite the slowdown in economic activity when many of us have been bunkered up indoors.
The slowdown as a consequence of the COVID measures led to a reduction of CO2 emissions of about 5 or a little bit over 5%. But those are CO2 emissions. And the CO2 concentrations is actually the accumulation of annual emissions. So you have to look at the atmosphere as sort of a bathtub. And what we basically did is turn down the tap by 5%. So the water was still flowing in. So the level of water was still going up.
That's it for our guide to the most memorable numbers of the year, as told to us by our more or less experts. Thank you to Dr. Hannah Ritchie, Professor Marina Adshade, and Professor Helene de Koning for such a well-rounded review. That is all we have time for this week, but if you spot any naughty numbers or dire data this year or next, please send them our way. We're at more or less at bbc.co.uk, and until next week, goodbye.